Lisa Shannon was managing a successful photography business with her fiancé in Portland, Oregon, 5 years ago when she saw an Oprah Winfrey show that changed her life. It was about the terrible violence women were suffering as a result of the long-running wars in eastern Congo, and it inspired Lisa to undertake a 30-mile run to raise money to help them. Since then, she's founded a national organization called Run for Congo Women. She's visited Congo to learn firsthand what life is like for the women she's working to help, and she tells their moving stories in a book called A Thousand Sisters, just out from Seal Press. I'm very pleased that it has brought Lisa Shannon to our show today. Hi.
Hi. Thanks so much for having me.
People must ask you all the time what inspired you to give up a comfortable and happy life to help women you've never met.
Yeah. I mean, I think I was just shocked when I saw that initial show. To see that it's the deadliest war since World War II and no one's talking about it. 5.4 million people have died. And, you know, it's the worst place on earth to be a woman. I think I had always been the sort of person that had told myself when I heard about the Holocaust, when I was exposed to, you know, information about the Rwandan genocide, that if I had known about something like that, surely I would have done something.
Well, did you know right away that you'd found your calling in helping these women, or is this something that's evolved over time?
It's absolutely evolved. The first year that I did that run, I assumed the run would be it. I just wanted to do something simple to send the message that I cared. I think there was one woman's story in particular that really grabbed me. She was talking about being dragged away by the militia, and they were attacking her. It seemed like they were going to rape or kill her, so she was begging for her life. And she was told, basically, you're not human. You're like an animal. Even if I killed you, what would it matter? You would not be missed. And what struck me about that was that in many ways the international community has agreed that when 5.4 million people die and no one's talking about it, that they're not valued and they're not missed. So I felt like
men and women, by the way, the plight of women there is particularly horrifying.
Yeah, no, but for sure. I mean, you know, often in an attack, men will just be killed and then the women are tortured or taken to the forest.
Yeah. How did Ted, your fiancé, react when you told him you wanted to run to raise money for the Congolese women?
Well, he was wildly supportive the first year.
Did he run with you?
No. No, the first year I ran alone. He would drop me off and go home and do laundry and cook and all that and then come pick me up after my 6 or 8 mile hour training run. But, you know, it did start to grow thin for him as I abandoned my duties with the business and the relationship. I didn't give it a lot of attention as I was focusing on this work. So
this really split up the relationship and took you out of the photography business.
Yeah, for sure.
And why running to raise money? I know people have done runs for other things, but mm-hmm. I've always wondered whether they weren't more symbolic than actually effective.
Well, a couple of things. One, it's because it was what I could think of at the time. I had never done anything like this before, and I was not a hardcore runner at all. But what I thought the running did communicate to people around me is how seriously I took it, because there was no way to fake the effort of training to run 30 miles. It meant showing up every single day to do it, and I think my friends and family got that.
And have you gotten a lot of other people to run now as well?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the second year when it started to spread, when the run started to spread, it was small, but, you know, we've had now more than 4,000 people do a run for Congo women.
How much money have you raised?
We've raised more than $650,000, sponsored more than 1,200 women in Congo, and those women are raising more than 6,000 children.
And you've funneled all that money through a group already working in Congo called Women for Women International. That was the group that was featured on Oprah the day you were watching?
Yeah, that's right. Basically, Women for Women International runs a sponsorship program where you can send women money. She goes through a training program and you exchange letters with her. And their terminology is to call that woman your sister, and you do really grow to feel that way. So it's about having a personal relationship with a Congolese woman and finding a way to communicate with her that you really care. And for a lot of these women, you know, it's the first time in their lives that anybody's really even asked them who they are or what they think about stuff. So when I went to Congo, I think that was actually one of my biggest surprises, is how important the letters were to the women.
Zainab Salbi, the founder of Women for Women, who wrote the foreword to your book, has been a guest on this program to talk about the problem. And now you have affiliated your organization with hers?
Yeah, that's right. Run for Congo Women is managed by Women for Women International now. So it's a project of Women for Women. It's never been sort of a standalone organization with funding. I mean, the first couple of years, it was a volunteer project run largely by me and my mother. And now Women for Women runs it, and I serve as founder and spokesperson.
And it follows the model people recognize with charities like Save the Children. Donors are asked to sponsor a specific Congolese woman by contributing $27 a month. And they have similar programs in Afghanistan, Kosovo, Bosnia, Sudan, Nigeria. But you talked about the letters. Sponsors are encouraged to write letters to the women they're helping. And I know somebody who sponsors, and she said, you know, until I read this book, I never really thought about writing the letter.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, I did not think it was the important part, and I didn't write a lot of letters to my first sisters. But when I got there, what I found was, you know, I was often cornered on Women for Women compounds with Congolese women handing me their little sponsorship books and showing me the letters from their sponsors. They would carry them around in packets around their necks, next to their hearts, like their most prized possession. They really do instantly consider their sponsor a lifeline and one of their best friends.
So how long after you finished your first fundraising run did you take your first trip to Congo?
It was about a year and a half after the first fundraising run that I went to Congo in February 2007.
So it escalated pretty quickly. How many times have you been back?
I've been three times. I actually just got back a month ago from spending 2 months in South Kivu and then in the far northeast in a town called Dungu that's been heavily affected by the LRA.
Well, the LRA, the Lord's Resistance Army, that they aren't the main culprits here, are they? Because we're also talking about the Rwandan civil war spilling out into East Congo and Hutus and Tutsis fighting each other, all sorts of renegade armies involved.
Yeah, I mean, essentially what you have is the FDLR, the militia that grew out of the Hutu militia responsible for the Rwandan genocide, otherwise known as the Interahamwe, those who killed together, in the forests in Congo, terrorizing locals, really like almost no other militia is doing. I mean, the sort of violence that they're perpetrating is off the charts. They're not necessarily responsible for most of the violence in eastern Congo, but they do seem to be everyone else's excuse for bad behavior.
But it sounds to me like eastern Congo is a place where all the other conflicts are spilling over. Lord's Resistance Army is from Uganda. These people are from Rwanda. But the victims are largely the Congolese.
Absolutely. And I think the one thing that often gets missed in discussions about Congo is what's really driving the conflict. I mean, the United Nations has accused all of the countries involved of using the war as a cover for looting. Congo is considered one of the wealthiest countries on the planet in terms of resources. They have diamonds, gold, coltan, which is used in our cell phones. So an enormous amount of money has been made off of the conflict on the parts of the governments of Congo, Rwanda, Uganda, international companies that operate there.
We're talking about an area where there are kidnappings, violent attacks, rapes. Were you worried for your own safety? Or did your skin color in some way protect you?
Well, I should be clear to say that it's not the same as Iraq or, say, Afghanistan, where Americans would be specifically targeted. However, I think it would be really dangerous to assume somehow because I'm American that I'm immune. I mean, when I was there just this last time, I was friends with a reporter from Italian Vanity Fair, and she swore it was really secure. And then the day after I left, drove straight through an FDLR ambush when someone had been assassinated 10 minutes before she drove by.
Was it difficult to find some common ground with these women? After all, they've been seriously traumatized. Some had been gang raped. Many had watched their husbands and children being beaten, raped, and murdered.
Yeah. Surprisingly, connecting with Congolese women was not difficult. I was amazed when I arrived. In every women's group, I was welcomed with just enormous celebration, song, dance that just seemed like it would never end. And when we sat down and talked, what I heard from every women's group is, I feel like a human being again. So for me, you know, I felt they were very open. They wanted to tell their stories.
Really? Because usually in cultures of this sort, it's people are ashamed by those experiences.
Well, in terms of talking about rape, yeah, I would qualify that and say that the tone was usually set very early on in a meeting. So if in a meeting people didn't feel like being open, no one would admit to have been being raped. But if one woman talked about it openly, then everyone else would too. So I would say it was about 50-50 in the women's groups that I spoke to, whether or not they felt open to talk about sexual violence, specifically any other kind of attack. They had no problem saying exactly what happened.
My guest is Lisa J. Shannon. Her book, A Thousand Sisters, My Journey into the Worst Place on Earth to Be a Woman, is published by Seal. You described how you won the trust of a group of pygmy women in the Congo by telling them about your great-great-great-great-great-grandfather.
Yeah,
George Harkins.
Yeah, that's right. He was the chief of the Choctaw tribe at the time they were led on the Trail of Tears. So when the pygmy women told me about white people showing up and sending them away from their home in the forest, having to do this long walk and be resettled, I told them about my family history. And although I had really stumbled when I first met them, made a few major cultural sort of snafus, by the end of the meeting, they said, it's as if we are the same. So it was pretty remarkable. And in fact, those women have since been enrolled in the Women for Women International program and just came out and did the Run for Congo Women in Congo that we just did.
Didn't one woman name her baby after you?
In fact, when I went on this trip, I've now met 5 Congolese baby Lisas.
Lisas?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, but you learned that many Congolese assumed that you'd give them money, especially if you visited their homes.
Oh, yeah, it was awkward. And I stumbled quite a bit, and I think that was inevitable just because it was my first trip to Africa. But usually if I was frank about it, the issue went away, and I found, you know, it's one of those things I think sometimes people are afraid to get involved in issues like this because they're afraid of getting it wrong somehow. And what I've experienced is, sure, you show up, you stumble, you misstep, but the point is to show up.
How did you respond when members of the military came by and demanded a share of what you'd given?
We didn't have that situation. I was never in a situation where military showed up and asked for a share of what I had given to Congolese women.
The other day we talked with Alice Walker about her experience with a woman named Jen Rose.
That's
you also
right.
Met Jen Rose.
Jen Rose is my sponsored sister. She was one of the first 30 women sponsored through Run for Congo Women. I'm probably closer to Jen Rose than just about any other woman I met in Congo, and she has quite a horrific story. I'm not sure if Alice shared that with you.
She lost a leg, which had been amputated. She'd been raped.
Yeah.
Although you point out that 90% of the women had been raped.
In many areas, that's correct. Yeah, Jenna Rose went through a particularly horrific attack where her husband and her child were killed and she lost her leg.
That's because she screamed, so they punished her by cutting off her leg?
Yeah, they were attacking her husband and she cried out to warn her neighbors and they immediately killed her husband and cut off her leg. But you know what's interesting about Jenna Rose is, again, we just did this Run for Congo Women in Congo, and she showed up that day with one leg in a red suit and pink pearls, and she, on her crutches that were really worn, did her best to run, and we ran together. She had to run barefoot because her foot was slipping, and she made it about a third of a mile. And I asked her why she did that, and she said, because if people know that I can run even just with one leg, then everyone will know that they can do something. So Generous to me is not just a horrific story, but really an unbelievably hopeful story about what can happen to Congolese women and their spirits when they maintain compassion and are allowed to rebuild.
by the time you met her, she developed an infection in her amputated leg. Has that been cleared up?
Yeah, that's right. When I was really looking forward to meeting Generose when I arrived, and she didn't show up at the meeting where we were supposed to meet. And she later, I ran into her at the hospital. She recognized me from photos, and she had a life-threatening infection in her leg. It was treated, and we bought her a house, and she's moved and now manages a business and has an employee and is doing great.
What was the response of women who gave birth to children as a result of rape? How did they handle that?
I found it varied from woman to woman, but in the book I talk about one sister who did not want to look at her child. She didn't want to feed it. She wanted nothing to do with it. And in the end, it was actually her husband who convinced her to take the baby in.
Which is kind of surprising, considering the way people are stigmatized after they've been raped in many parts of the world.
Extremely unusual story. Often women are abandoned after they're raped.
I understand that you've just returned from a two-month trip to the Congo. Are conditions improving at all?
I would say the security situation in Congo is in flux and difficult to gauge at any particular time. Moments may feel calm, and then it flares up again. I do not refer to Congo as post-conflict like some people do, because when I talk with Congolese women, they don't believe it's post-conflict at all.
Couldn't some outside army from the UN or from the African states go in there and stop this whole thing if it wanted to?
I believe that there's an enormous amount that can be done, although I also believe that most of the solutions to the situation here are diplomatic. The UN is on the ground. It's the peacekeeping force isn't big enough, I believe. But I think when we look at the key levers for the war, I'm not sure that military intervention is going to solve the problem. I think it has more to do with diplomatic pressure on countries like Rwanda and the government of Congo itself.
Mm-hmm. Well, why isn't the government of Congo dealing with this? After all, it is within their territory.
Yeah, there's a good question. I believe that members of the government of Congo are making a lot of money off of the chaos. And further, one of the major security issues you see on the ground is the Congolese army itself. They integrate these guys from militias, give them guns, and they don't pay them. So it's basically expected that they'll take what they want from the locals, and often they rape while they're at it. And now even it's quite common to hear stories about them effectively being paid assassins.
Lisa Shannon will be speaking with Zainab Salbi, who founded Women for Women International, tonight at 7 o'clock at the Strand Bookstore on Broadway and 12th Street. Her book, A Thousand Sisters, My Journey into the Worst Place on Earth to Be a Woman, published by Seal Press. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you so much for having me.